Here's a perspective that just may surprise you.
If you have someone in your life who regularly makes you mad, that person is a real gift from God in a way. Because if you can figure out why that person is able to control you, why you are giving them free rent in your head, then you can learn a lot about you. Why do I let somebody else do it? And again, I have to ask myself, why do I think that I should be able to control events like this or people like this? Why do I think I have the right to dictate what somebody else is going to do and how they're going to do it? That's a real weird power trip sort of thing.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
When someone rubs us the wrong way or the circumstances of life are hitting you like a ton of bricks, how do you normally respond? Do you lose it more often than not? We all get angry at times, but is there a way to manage it so it doesn't get the best of us? Today on The Balanced Word, we'll bring you one of the best anger management classes around, and it's taught by Solomon in the Proverbs. Pastor Dave Rolfe is here to continue our series, Smarter Living.
When was the last time you got really mad? And how often do you get mad? We're looking at the subject in Proverbs today of anger and anger management. Pastor Ken told me that he saw a study where the average man gets mad about 6 times a week, and the average woman gets mad about 3 times a week. Unless she's single, then she gets mad as much as men do. But it's like, so do you feel like, good? No, I don't think I get mad that many times. Or maybe you're going, wow, I'm way above average. Anger is a strange thing. It's a weird response. We all get angry at different times. We all experience that emotion of being angry. But some people manage it pretty well, and some people don't manage it well at all. And that becomes an anger problem when someone doesn't manage it well. And it's completely disruptive. Now, when you look in the scriptures, you see major examples of people who got really mad. I think of Jonah, such a strange story where God called him to go to Nineveh. He gets in a boat, goes the other direction, ends up getting tossed over, swallowed by a whale, spit up on the land. And then he goes, okay, I'll go. And he goes to Nineveh and he preaches, and it's one of the biggest revivals in all of history. Now, how many times does a preacher get to preach and see everyone, including the king, say, yeah, we're in, we want to walk with God. But he was like really mad that they got saved. And so God came to him and he goes, why are you mad? He goes, you're darn right I'm mad. I knew you'd do this, God. I didn't want these people to get saved. And here, you with your soft, loving heart, you ended up rescuing these people. I wanted to see them burn. It's like so weird that you would have that kind of a reaction, but he just completely lost control. You see Moses, who, had been faithfully leading the children of Israel, and the children of Israel acted terrible most of the time, but he was just so patient with them. But finally, as he was older, 110, 115, something like that, when you get older, you can get a little more crotchety. And, God told him, hey, the people need water, so I want you to speak to the rock, and I'll make water come out. But Moses was so mad. Now, earlier, he had said, strike the rock, and water came out. So Moses is like, he gets up in front of the people and he's like, God and I are so sick of you guys. You just are disgusting. And he takes his stick and whacks the rock twice and water comes out. But God said, you misrepresented me. You think that because you're mad that I'm mad. By the way, we all do this. We assume that God's mad every time we are. That's our excuse for being mad. But because of that, Moses didn't get to go into the promised land. It was a horrible mistake that he made. It was a sad moment in the life of somebody who had been so faithful, and anger ended up robbing him of that which he was looking forward to for 80 years. Couldn't do it because of anger. So we look at anger and we go, wow. Now, if you look at today's political climate, it's all about anger. It's like, okay, who am I madder at? You know, and the way to motivate people is let's get them mad and let's go for it. And it's so weird. It's really sad when people mix God in with their anger. And I always say, when you mix God and anger and politics, that's like the worst thing ever. And yet we become so used to doing that. But in Proverbs, Solomon has a lot to say about helping us deal with anger. Now, let me make this clear. There's nothing wrong with feeling angry. In fact, there's nothing wrong with feeling anything. There is no feeling that you can feel that's wrong to feel that way. You can't control what you feel. The question is, how do you deal with and process the things that you're feeling? And that's where it becomes a problem. You know, most people are familiar with in Ephesians 4 where Paul says, be angry and sin not. There's a way that you can be angry and still not let it take over. But Solomon quite often talks about when you begin to lose it, when anger begins to drive you and motivate you. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 16. The first verse that we're going to look at is Proverbs 16 and verse 32. Solomon says here, Proverbs 16, 32, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. See, the issue, you know, as he says, the opposite of losing it is ruling your spirit, is controlling how you're responding to the events in your life, to situations that happen. Anger is ultimately almost always about control or a lack thereof. See, when things happen that are outside of our control, it frustrates us, it worries us, it concerns us, and quite often, that's where that initial sense of anger comes up. We have this God-given ability to imagine, to be able to look at life and say, here's the way I expect it to turn out. Here's how I want people to act in my life. Here's what I think I'm going to do. Here's how I think things are going to go. Well, life has a really nasty way of not cooperating with our imagination. And so when it doesn't, we're like, ugh, right away we begin to feel that. It's like if you are going somewhere and you plan it all out, you look at your map program, see where the traffic's going to be, and you know, I'm leaving and I have 5 minutes to spare. And then there's an accident that for some reason these map programs cannot predict when somebody gets in an accident. And you're on the freeway and you're like, oh, you're tensing up, your heart's beating faster. You're beginning to hyperventilate because like, I did everything I could do to be on time and some idiot is out there and wrecks their car for no reason. They probably did it on purpose just to tick me off. And oh, we get so angry. We get angry when people don't react the way we expect them to, when people disappoint us by not being the way we think they ought to be. But we even get mad at ourselves because we do something and we go, what was that about? That's not me at all. That's not the way I do it. Why did I do that? And we begin to, you know, get so frustrated because of the fact that we're not good at predicting what's going to happen. The ironic thing is that anger almost always comes because of a sense of a lack of control. But the ironic thing is, then anger ends up making us lose control even more. See, if I go, oh, I couldn't control this event, that makes me so mad, then I lose control and fall apart and create even more problems and give other people a reason to be angry as well. But it's ultimately this control thing that's really going on, that if we're ever going to understand anger, we have to understand why we think we deserve to control things, why we think that we can decide what is supposed to happen. We realize sometimes something that happens that's a surprise to me, that frustrates me, might be a real blessing to somebody else. That doesn't matter. You know, we realize that you know, you look at your house and it's like, oh man, it's going down in value. This is horrible. But to some guy who's trying to buy a house, it's great news. And, you know, so it gets complicated, but ultimately it's only as we begin to understand why we think that we should be able to control things. and how we can handle those times when things happen that are outside of our control, that we begin to explore this whole idea of anger. Now, as he says here in verse 32, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. It seems like a key to dealing with those angry feelings, those frustrations that you have, is first of all just to slow it down. Try to put the delay action on it. Try to hold it up a little bit. Don't just respond immediately to a situation. Now turn back a couple chapters to chapter 14 and verse 29. And he says here, he who is slow to wrath has great understanding. Over in Proverbs 19:11, it has the same sentence, but it says, has discretion. That Hebrew word means is intelligent. In other words, the smart thing to do is find a way to slow down the anger, to not just, you know, as he says here, he who is impulsive exalts folly. So you have two ways of dealing with your frustration, either the knee-jerk impulsive reaction or to be able to figure out how to slow it down. So the question for us in terms of managing that anger and frustration is, how do you slow it down? Well, one of the obvious things, anytime you can buy some time, that's a good thing. Maybe it's just, I'm not going to say anything, I'm going to go for a walk. There are people who, you know, one thing that you hear people say a lot is, count to 10 before you react impulsively to something. And that's probably a good policy. It slows the clock down. It, you know, you might go, okay, I'll count to 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever. Okay, I'm over it. You know, just that delay is an important thing, is a good thing to do. Find a way. It's interesting that the word for anger in Hebrew comes from the root word of nose. And their picture of anger is somebody who's breathing really hard. And, you know, when you're stressed and angry, you typically tighten your nose and you breathe through your mouth. And so it's like, you know, that's kind of what you do. That was their description of anger. So if you want to slow that down, you realize some of it is even in your breathing. When people are upset, if you can get them to slow down their breathing, you can get them to slow down their impulsivity. Just like, hang on here a minute, just slow down. When you see people hyperventilating, you can't even reason with them, and you can't reason with yourself once your heart's pounding and your breathing's going. And so being slow to anger is being like, hang on, just slow your breathing down. Calm yourself down a little bit. And so sometimes that helps, sometimes we do that. But there are other ways that we are sometimes able to slow things down. And one of them is, again, as he says here, the person who is slow to wrath has great understanding. That means when you get angry, when you feel anger, there's an opportunity to learn something here. Do you understand why you feel the way you do? Do you understand what's actually contributing to this situation or not? You know, I mentioned in Ephesians where Paul said, be angry and sin not, don't let the sun go down on your anger. That's a quote from Psalm 4 and verse 4 where David says, be angry and sin not, and then he says, meditate on your bed. And so the idea is, at the end of the day, when you're laying there in bed and it's quiet and everything is calm, start thinking about your day and think about how you reacted the way that you react and why you did. This kind of understanding, this kind of intelligence, comes from asking yourself the right questions. If I understand that if I'm feeling anger, it has something to do with something being out of my control, it's a good time to calm down and breathe slow and just go, why did that bug me so much? Why am I letting someone else, or why am I letting a circumstance, a random series of events, or random people who are in my life, Why am I giving them control of my temperament? Why am I letting my life be shortened because of stress over just something that they do? Whether they have the right to do it or not, it doesn't even matter. Most of the time, the things that make us mad aren't even somebody deliberately doing something. It's just random accidental circumstances. And so to begin to think about that, it gives us an opportunity to learn a lot about ourselves. If you have someone in your life who regularly makes you mad, that person is a real gift from God, in a way. Because if you can figure out why that person is able to control you, why you are giving them free rent in your head, then you can learn a lot about you. Why do I let somebody else do it? And again, I have to ask myself, why do I think that I should be able to control events like this or people like this? Why do I think I have the right to dictate what somebody else is going to do and how they're going to do it? That's a real weird power trip sort of thing. If I think that everyone needs to do what I think they ought to do, controlling me is a full-time job. Bothering with controlling other people, that's, I don't have the right to do it, and it will end up polluting and corrupting me because I'm trying to do somebody else's job while I'm also trying to do my own, and quite often I'll neglect my own in trying to help them. And ultimately, for people who believe in God, this is a chance for us to say, God, why do I think that something is wrong that has happened to me? What makes me think that I have the right to control things that you don't even take over and control? See, when I talk about God being sovereign and in control, I don't believe that God is micromanaging everything and that, you know, when, you know, a bunch of people get kidnapped and murdered, that that's God's plan or anything. But at the same time, I realize if God doesn't do something, he at least has a reason for not preventing it. If we believe in God, we have to believe he knows a whole lot more than we do. So might he have a really good reason for something happening that may be frustrating to me? And I have to ask myself, who's in control? Do I believe that God is in control? Do I believe that he is working everything together for good to people who love him and I love him? And so taking the time to really understand that and process it that way can help me to slow down my impulsive reactions to circumstances that happen. For me to get mad every time I don't get my way is for me to believe that I am essentially God, that I get to call the shots, that I get to predict what's going to happen. And that's a really unhealthy and dangerous precedent, ultimately, for people who actually believe in a God. Now, sometimes in processing this, one thing that helps me sometimes, I love Psalm 139, and where, you know, David is talking about, God, you know everything. You have searched me and known me. You know my down sitting. You know mine uprising. You understand my thoughts afar off. If I go into heaven, you're there. If I descend down into the bottom of the sea, you're there. And then he ends up by saying, so, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. And see if there's any wicked way in me, and lead me in the eternal way. In other words, coming to God and saying, this is weird, the way that I'm reacting, but I want to invite you to look at my heart and see, what do I learn about me based on how I'm reacting to what has happened? Because it may be that somehow in God's sovereignty, he actually brought us into a situation that he knew would frustrate us so that we would go, wow, I have a lot to learn about myself. If you have people in your life who regularly make you mad and who frustrate you, maybe you need to get those people out of your life, but maybe it's just that God brings them there in order to show you something about you, in order to show me something about me. If I let other people control how I react to life, I'm giving them way more power than they ought to have. And so a part of this understanding is to come to God and say, why did that bug me so much? And often at the end of the day, as I'm lying in bed or something, this is a good time to say, okay, God, this happened and it frustrated me. It infuriated me. And I don't know why what's the deal, God? What is it that I'm missing here? What is it that I'm not understanding? It's a great chance for growth, to be able to take the time to process those things that affect us in that way and to find ways to understand. Now, not only that, another way to slow down anger is to, there are certain ways in which you can express your anger in an appropriate way. One of the greatest ways is in prayer. See, when you're mad about something, it's hard to find someone you can tell it to that either understands, doesn't judge you for it, doesn't like back off and not want something to do with you. Except God is the one who goes, I don't care how ticked off you are, I just want to hear from you. David's such a beautiful example of this. The guy who was a man after God's own heart. You read through the Psalms and he's like, I hate these people with a perfect hatred. I want you to shatter their teeth within their mouth, kill their kids, destroy all of their families, rip their houses up, burn them with fire. I mean, that's like some of David's prayer life. And then God really, you know, David's like, this is just between me and you, God. And God goes, yeah, sure, but I'll put it in the Bible. And people are always going to see what a hothead you were. But see, you can tell anything to God, and he does not get offended. He, not only that, when you get angry, you'll always overstate cases. Nobody ever, this person always, and you don't have to go back and explain to God, you know, I didn't mean everything. I meant a lot of the time. He's like, I totally know. I read your mind. I know your heart. I know that you mean well. I know you're trying to do the best that you can. So you don't have to explain yourself with him. He always sees you in the light of the fact that his son died for you and has forgiven you of everything anyway. And he's just like, get it off your chest. And so I think prayer can be a great way for us to help process some of these angry things.
We're receiving God's wisdom from the Proverbs right here on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Roth. It's part of a series called Smarter Living. And you can request a CD copy by calling 949-362-7475. I should also mention this entire series is available on a USB for a donation of $10 or more. You'll receive all 51 messages in the series that'll lead you to smarter living as you hear and learn to live by God's wisdom from the Proverbs. So call us at 949-362-7475 and ask for the Smarter Living Thumb Drive. Our programs are also available online at thebalancedword.com. Thank you for your support of the Balanced Word Radio Ministry. It allows us to bring Pastor Dave's teachings to stations like this one all across the nation. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com. Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. You can hear him teach on a Sunday morning at any one of these three times, 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information or to live stream. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Here's an appropriate way to express our anger by simply writing it down.
Sometimes too, in addition to praying, sometimes it's a good chance for us to, as we are processing in this thing, sometimes we just need to go ahead and express it like journaling. That's what David did, he journaled. I'm not a big journaler. I have journals with pens, and every few months I'll open it up and go, wow, it's been a while. But when I do journal, I look back at things that I wrote and either go, what was I thinking? Or I go, some things never change. Or I go, it was good for me to say that. So when you write, it helps you process and to think and to work through things. You have to put it into words that are clear. And I think most of us would be much healthier if we journaled more. It was certainly a big outlet for David, and there are a lot of people who would just tell you journaling is really important to their mental health. But I think, too, sometimes write a letter to the person that you're mad at and just tell them exactly what you think. Don't hold back. Use any kind of language that you want. Really put it down, and you're like, this nails it. This is what it is. And then just hit delete before you send it. You know, or just print it out, wad it up, and throw it away. And the amazing thing is, you've processed it, you've expressed what's on your heart, that will give you insights about yourself, and you haven't done the damage that you do when you go, I'm gonna give you a piece of my mind. You don't need to do that. Most of us don't have a piece to spare. And so, you know, but just to be able to express it sometimes helps. Going through this processing, the point is, it's totally possible for us to process the anger that erupts and to be able to find a constructive way to deal with it in a way that'll end up not doing the kind of damage that when we react in a strong way that we actually end up perpetrating.
Well, we learned today how we deal with our own anger, but how do you deal with the anger of another person? We'll talk about that next time on The Balanced Word, when we'll hear the conclusion of Dave Rolfe's study on anger management. Have a great weekend. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands.